Well, Happy New Year's to those of you in the Mountain Time Zone. I hope you enjoy 2019. We're going to come back in a moment talking more with our prophecy expert, John Hogue, and taking your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We've got John Hogue this hour taking your calls, talking more about prophecy. John, what's the method that you use for prophecy? I mean, do you meditate? Does it just come to you? How does that work for you?
I meditate. I could say that, you know, and it's funny because I used to do readings with cards and divination, and then at a certain point 26 years ago, I stopped and started reading the world the way I read people individually. And after 26 years, through meditation and through just getting out of my own way, I would really say that I have never made a prediction. Predictions make it through me. And meditation to kind of relax and see something of your existence that's not changing, that's not appearances, that's not a part of the identity, the personality, which in Latin means mask, not the mind, not the emotions that we seem to identify with, is something that I do. And it just happens that it comes through me and does meditations. And I've even come back to doing private readings now. I mean, today, this is like hour 15 of my work day, and because Jeez. It's New Year's and people want to know what's coming in their future, I started at 10 o'clock my first reading. I've had some breaks, but I'm just going nonstop. So it's a mystery how it's an energy transference between me and the individual. And if one person said something yesterday in the reading, said, you know, it feels like I just had a coast-to-coast interview one-on-one with John Hogue.
I love it.
So I wanted to share that with you.
That's cute. Do you ever get told that you look like, except for me, of course, that you look like Nostradamus?
I do, but I have to correct them and say, no, Nostradamus looks like me.
I love it. It's you could be the reincarnated Nostradamus, you know.
Well, if I were, we'll just look at that possibility. One of the things that can, even if it's a grand delusion, it reminds me of something I'm going to be writing about in a book about looking at reincarnation a completely different way than it's usually looked at. It's something that helped me by sitting at the feet of Osho, who had very unorthodox ways of looking at reincarnation and lots of amazing things when I lived with him in India. And the thing is that there's here's a story. That's not enough time for that story. So anyway, the main thing that's amazing to me about this is that if you've been a famous person, there's a record. And so even if you think, and you're deluded that you think you're a famous person, there's still the same record to look at. It has the same message for the deluded person who thinks they're Cleopatra, like 5 million other women, or whatnot. And no one says, hey, I'm Joe Schmo.
Exactly.
Life. And that is that if there's a record, you'll get to see that in those past lives, you got the girl, you got the wealth, you got all the dreams that you strive for and have ambitions for in this life 10 times over. So why are you still the hamster on the wheel who thinks every time the golden rung comes in front of you, it's like, oh boy, another attainment. More golden rungs I get, I'm just going to get better and better. Now, meditation is like a camera that takes you, pans back, and shows you a bigger picture where you're not just the hamster looking at these beautiful gold rungs that make you more and more spiritual, but you see that the poor hamster has got one rung and a hamster wheel called the wheel of samsara in Asia. It's the cycle of birth and death. And every time it thinks it's got a new gold bar that it's attained, it's the same gold bar.
So what do you see in terms of 2020 candidates competing with President Trump? Will there be a lot of Republicans that try to get him out? Will there be how many Democrats? What do you think?
Well, just to briefly finish what I said is that meditation reaches this point where you drop off the wheel of the misery-go-round of life and death. So that's the hypothesis of meditation. You see it, and then you're free of it. Now, to the politics. There are four people that have come forth to, before they challenge Trump, they have to challenge Hillary Clinton, because she is definitely...
She's not going away yet, that's for sure.
And here's an interesting thing I want to put past your listeners, is that when you look at the new California governor, Gavin Newsom, and the junior senator of California, Kamala Harris, from the West Coast, and then you look at Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts and Bernie Sanders of Vermont from the East Coast, Hillary Clinton has a situation. Of course, there'll be more people coming into this group. I think that the Democrats will probably outdo the Republicans from 4 years earlier and have more than 17, 20, 21 people.
Wow.
But the thing is, these are the main players, and there is an East-West Coast bias in U.S. politics that has seen only one native Californian become president of the United States.
Now that's Ronald Reagan.
Nope, he wasn't born in California.
Oh, he wasn't. Okay.
But Richard Nixon was.
Aha, that's right.
And so it's a big milestone. It's like football bias. You know, if you come from the West Coast, you don't see a lot of dynasties like San Francisco and even my team, the Seahawks, of late. I mean, it's usually all the East Coast teams because of the three-hour difference. Now, the same thing happens in politics, though not with time zones. It comes with a culture divide. And so Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris have that obstacle to deal with. Hillary Clinton doesn't. She comes from Chicago, but she is really rooted in the Democratic elite of the East Coast that really run the Democratic Party machine. And the other thing, too, is that they are also pitted against two East Coast progressives. The other thing that is in her favor is that all four of those people I mentioned are progressives, which means, unlike last time in the Democratic convention, she may not have to try to rig the thing before it starts, because these four progressives cancel each other and dilute their votes. So in an oddball way, and this could all change because this is way too early, and I'm not officially making my declaration yet, but... You know, I can't help letting go this weird prophetic itch that I've had since the end of the last century that Hillary Clinton somehow has this destiny to become president. And wouldn't it be strange if she plays, like in Great Expectations, the Dickens novel, Miss Havisham, the girl who came to the wedding, lost her shoe, and then kept her kind of fixated on that stop in her life and never moved for 20 years. In a political sense, Hillary Clinton's like a lot of people who have been shocked by her loss. They can't live beyond 8th November 2016, and they just want to repeat that, I think it's 3rd November 2020. It may happen. There's an outside chance. But I really don't think it will happen. And I think one of the things that will ruin the Democrats' chance to take Donald Trump out, because, you know, I have said he has in his astrology a strong possibility of being a two-term president, is because they've diluted their own ability to beat him. And secondly, I have seen and said this over the years that I've been making presidential predictions, anybody but campaigns always ends up a disaster for the party.
It does. It sure does. Let's take some calls for you. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla. Happy New Year, Tommy.
Greetings, George, to you and the staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wish all of you and the audience a magnificent 2019.
And Tom, let me quickly say something to you. I want to just thank you for your support of this program over the years and the quality of your phone calls to our guests and the politeness that I don't witness on many other talk shows. This audience and the people who call this show are so disciplined and honorable, but you are way at the top of the list, and I want to thank you for that.
Well, I want to say, George, you know, the audience of Coast to Coast is spectacular to me. Listening to Open Lines every Friday is a revelation. And each and every...
Yeah, they are.
each and every person just delivers. John, thank you for what you do. My question, John, you know, prophets in the past not only delivered prophecy and, how should I say it, you know, predictions, but they also delivered prescriptions for being. You've addressed that a little bit, talking about meditation. And most of us, the average man, the average woman, do not have the resources to face apocalypse, whether it's resources of precious metals, underground bunkers, you know, a rich uncle, or whatever. So my question is, to face the apocalyptic future, rather than fight the future, how do we, instead of tactics, strategies, plans, schemes, how do we center ourselves, balance ourselves, harmonize ourselves, and in effect, empower ourselves in our own being if we have no resources to face the apocalyptic future?
What a beautiful question, Tommy. And first off, the first thing to do is to understand what apocalypse means. When most of you think of apocalypse, you think of doom and gloom and revenge, divine revenge, destruction of the world. But this is the filth that's been put on this very beautiful word from ancient Greece. Apocalypse means lifting the veil. The problems that have created all of this in our lives, that has set us on this course of having to make this huge lifestyle humanity change, is that we need to lift the veil of all the ways the past has programmed us to repeat itself. And it cannot be done collectively. It can be done one individual at a time. It is ironic paradox that if enough of all you individuals, the millions of you listening to this now, start turning in and looking at the mechanics of how you've had, as since a child, had to adopt identities, religions, national identities, and even your feelings are kind of been, you've been trained to own them, when in fact feelings like thoughts may be like clouds in the sky. They come and go, and if you could just simply be in a pure waiting mode, alert, available, but unattached, you would find that a lot of the things that upset you just vanish into thin air. Watching all of this is something that may be eternity and the answer itself, and it's in this moment. So that is something that needs to be spread, each individual all over the world. You are never too late to understand this, and you're never too early, because this thing is not what I'm saying. It has to be experienced. Meditation is one of the ways, and I can offer you some meditation techniques if you're interested in what I'm saying here that could help you have a direct existential experience of that which doesn't change and that which is not identified, which is very, very blissful. And if more people take this on, that is how the world will avoid the dirtier version of the apocalypse.
Do you take a lot of emails, John, off your website?
I do. I've had sometimes on these shows when I offer that occasionally, I one time had 5,000 people ask for that information.
That's great.
So it's information I can give, because I don't like having to say things that I have not directly experienced, because anything that I'm talking about that is not my experience, it doesn't have authority of experience. So these are the meditations I've been doing since 1980. And if you resonate with me in some way that's beyond words, but you feel it, something's going on here. It's these meditations since 1980 that have made me the person I am.
All right, next up, let's go to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill, welcome.
Hi, hi, George. Hi. I've been needing my sleep for the past couple of months. That's why I haven't called in.
Well, I hope you're healthy and ready to go again.
Yes, I am, and raring for 2019, and it's 2019 now, of course. And, John, I have a political question for this year, 2019, regarding President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence regarding Robert Mueller and Russiagate. And I want to ask you, do you think it's possible, as far as what you would think of as a prediction for this year, 2019, that both President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence will both be impeached and removed from office because of Russiagate? Mike Pence, because he might have known or did know about the Russiagate situation because he was the head of the campaign, Trump's campaign, after the election up to January 20, 2017. So he would have been aware of a lot of things then. So do you think it's possible that both Trump and Pence could or would be impeached, and Democratic Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi would be the interim president of the United States until the next election of 2020?
Okay, I'm going to make a declaration, and in the process of prophecy, a lot of things I say as a forecaster may sound shocking and may sound, oh, how can you prove that? How can that happen? And what creates credibility for people who do forecasting like me is we make our statements and then we let the future be the judge. Not what you hope will happen, not what you fear will happen, but simply what actually happens. If the prophecy is correct, it happens. And so the thing I must say is, first and foremost, Russiagate is a unicorn. It is not going to be anything that can take somebody to court to be impeached. The other thing, too, is that you can't say that a $5,000 put into a troll factory in Russia swung the election. There are so many things that I've written about in my Hillary Clinton book and others that shows that the news right now has gotten into, I call it cult news. All the networks now are so lost in supposition. I mean, I've been in journalism for 38 years. I've been on all those networks. I know how CNN and Fox works. I've debated Sean Hannity. I've done a lot of these things over the years as a forecaster. And what I've seen happen is journalism in this country has been lost. And without that pinnacle, you don't really know what's going on. You've just gained, and what's happening now is people are so deep into just talking about what could be said or what could happen. But there's, in my time, when I grew up, we wouldn't talk about something like Russiagate or Watergate until there was evidence, and then Walter Cronkite would get up and talk about it, or Huntley and Brinkley would get up and talk about it. But in this day and age, I've seen 2 years of CNN and MSNBC just talking about what might happen, and people are starting to get so inured with that that they're thinking that's actually data and news. The thing that's going to take Trump down is not Russiagate. He will not be impeached by Democrats, but he could go down for things like he did a few weeks back when he started abandoning Syria military.
Interesting. John, more of that to come when we come back with you in a moment. And final phone calls with John Hogue. And then we'll go into our predictions and we'll open up the vault from 2018 and read a number of predictions from you. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, John Hogue, our final segment. Let's go to the calls again. Let's go to our first-time caller, Mike, in Morro Bay, California. Michael, welcome to the program. Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you, George and John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John, on global warming and how it goes on, but like in the mountains in the Hearst Ranch, up on the Hearst Ranch and stuff, years ago, I used to doze the roads, but way up on top of the mountain, I'd find, like, big clusters of oysters. Like, the oysters were, like, you know, like 12 inches long, just clusters of them growing in petrified, of course. But so the Earth does change a lot, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yes, but what's your extensive knowledge on paleontology and earth sciences?
None at all.
Okay, so why is it so much in this? I'm not speaking about you personally, but we see something, and we use our common sense. Just like you said there, if I look out from the hills there in Big Sur, and I see the ocean, and it looks like it's flat, then I could say the Earth, the scientists, what are they talking about? The Earth's flat.
It is, isn't it, John?
Next questioner.
Boy, that we've done a couple shows on that. That's a strange, strange theory.
I love his oyster story. That was unique.
Hey, Michael, thanks. Enjoy the new year, and thanks for being a great listener. Really appreciate it. John, as you look toward, let's say, beyond 2019, see any big world war popping up?
Well, you know, as I said earlier in the first hour, it's definitely a high possibility. Ironically, one of the highest possibilities of it might actually be another Missiles of October situation like 1962, only October 2021.
That'd be an interesting take. Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, Happy New Year, guys.
You too.
John, two questions. One would be the media is ridiculous. You could see propaganda at every point. Now, for example, they rarely go to another country. I just heard something on the radio about Argentina, and it was just another propaganda slant. So it seems to have deteriorated to where they're just trying to push an agenda rather than doing work like the BBC does, some actual work. And the second thing is the Middle East. You're mentioning the Crown Prince may be the Antichrist. We're fueling arms to him, and we're trying to disarm Iran. Now, what makes Iran so bad and Saudi Arabia so good? Especially how we do have a lot of reports of horrible treatment by the Saudi regime of their own people.
Yes, so the thing that I try to do, I've been a news hound since I was 8. In fact, my 8th birthday was October 29th, 1962, the date that World War III would have happened if Kennedy and Khrushchev hadn't resolved their issue. That was the date they were going to bomb Cuba. And it was a very big shock, that whole thing. It was the first of three major premonitions that I talk about in a book called Nostradamus Premonitions of 9/11, that I had an awareness of this thing, this nuclear war happening before it became public in the days running up to my birthday. And ever since then, I have been fascinated by journalism, history, and also have seen how what you're saying is also my experience, that things have been motivated now more by business, and the editors are now corporations rather than real news editors. The thing is, there's a de-education going on that people don't understand in the Middle East, that the Middle East issue is a Sunni majority Muslim group versus a Shia minority group. When the president and when other people keep saying that Iran is the chief number one funder of international terrorism, they are right as far as perhaps Hezbollah being financed and supported and armed by them as a proxy to check the threat of Israel launching Jericho missiles with nuclear weapons on Iran. That's what I've come to understand. But what gets me about this is, who were the 15 of the 18 people of Al-Qaeda who destroyed our towers and hit the Pentagon? Sunni Saudi Arabians. Who has been sending since the late 80s, creating these madrasas, these religious schools all across the Islamic world, radicalizing entire generations of people with Wahhabist Islamic concepts, which is the state religion of Saudi Arabia, which is a very extreme and some would say heretical Islamic sect that does not honor all five of the virtues of being a Muslim, some people contend. Who has financed this hatred that is taking over the Islamic world? but the very Saudi Arabians that we're giving hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons to, the crown prince and his father and the few kings before him. The cancer of international terrorism is not Iran. That's a ruse. It is, if you look at the facts, it is a Sunni issue. It's the Salafist Muslim Brotherhood issue. And it is not, it's like a distraction. It's really what's going on here is it's a fight between regional powers, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Iran, to dominate the Middle East. And the two, one is Jewish, one is Sunni Muslim, and the minority Shias in Iran. The problem is that Iran is where most of the Shias populations in the Middle East actually live where the oil is, even in Saudi Arabia, and they're constantly persecuted. These things you're not going to hear about. And it's dangerous because if you lose your free press, you have lost the pillar that supports your democracy. You then don't know what's going on. You don't actually know what really Russians did or didn't do. You're just getting propaganda. Very dangerous situation.
Indeed. Carla's with us now in Queens, New York. Hi, Carla.
Hi, George. God bless you all and happy, healthy, and prosperous New Year.
You too.
All of us. All
yes.
of us. We
yes.
need it.
Yes, we do.
Dear John, I want to ask you something. You mentioned Nostradamus. Said that the paper monetary system would dissipate. But I didn't understand maybe I missed it. What kind of monetary system then would take hold of the world? Then what would happen?
The thing that's coming up now is we're lucky this time in this next bout of the fourth turning, an 80-year cycle. I mean, basically right now, this New Year's is like moving from 1938 into 1939. And there's a lot of things over the horizon that are coming. This current version of it is a different variation on fascism. It's more corporate. And the other fortunate thing is that if the fiat, and that's what I was speaking of, a thing based on paper, a thing that had no gold or values of tangible wealth backing it. This was Nostradamus, I think, was indicating. What's coming, though, is there are lifeboats. I talked a bit about Bitcoin being eventually evolving into something. There's also systems that China and Russia are already actively using to get off the U.S. dollar and to get on another kind of gold standard-based economy. So it's very possible in the 2020s that we will have different economic reality systems in the world. We have now a multi-state, a multipolar political situation that might soon become a multipolar economic situation.
Alex in Rochester, New Hampshire, it's your turn, Alex. Go ahead.
Yes, happy New Year's.
You too, Alex.
Yes, thank you. I was driving by a store in a nearby city where I live. It was actually a gun store, and it had a business sign on the road, on the other side of the road, like with letters that you can you know, arrange the sign. And the sign, the gun store sign said, Armageddon is coming. And my thought is, what exactly does that mean? What is the difference between that and apocalypse, for example? Is it simply biblically based? I'm wondering, maybe they were just, you know, conservative Christians, for example, based on their interpretation of the Bible. I'm running as a write-in candidate for U.S. president, and I'm thinking, maybe this is something I should think about.
I'm getting curious about this, and when people get Armageddoning, getting this way or that way, because it means whatever they project. I mean, I would like to tell everybody who believes the book of Revelations is about our future that there are a number of very significant things that show that St. John was not talking about our times, but was talking about his own. And as the near future, that it was supposed to happen around the corner. you know, it, 2,000 years later is not around the corner. I mean, words do have meanings. And when 666, and he's strongly hinting who 666 is in the beast, and it spells out the numerical equivalents of the letters that in Greek and in Hebrew that spell out Neron Kaiser, which is Nero Caesar. It's very possible that the book of Revelation has nothing to do with our future. But it doesn't matter because, you see, thoughts, if people all believe in something that's true, even if it's completely imagined, if you do that over a couple thousand years, you create realities that you don't even need to create. And it's come time to kind of expose the givens that people just run with.
Well, that's absolutely true. We've got Jim in Newark, Delaware now, waiting on the line. Hey, Jim.
Hey, George. Happy New Year to both of you.
You too, Jimmy.
Thank you.
I read a book, the recent book I read was about Enoch, the son of Jared. And and there, Enoch, who people say is one of two men in the Old Testament that never died. Actually, some believe they're on the earth now, awaiting the end of days to prepare people for the second coming. Anyway, Enoch gives in this book, it says Enoch gave a 100-year window when Jesus would make his second return. Of course, Enoch didn't know his name would be Jesus. But Messiah would make his return between 1975 and 2075. And I'm not hearing any idea of that. And John, in your assessment of the future.
Well, the thing is, first off, as you say, they didn't know that Yeshua was Jesus Christ. It's an important point to answer because it's very likely that Rome, which had been so successful in Romanizing other religions throughout its 2,000 years of dominance, had its most successful Romanization, so successful that no one even thinks about it, is that the largest religion in the world actually prays to a name of the Son of God that is not actually the name that the man used when he walked the earth. It is a name that Emperor Constantine gave and the Council of Nicaea gave when they systemized and corporatized the Christian faith. It's very likely that if you say, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, then I take that to mean possibly render all the things that you assume are part of the Christian faith, like virgin births, which is actually from the Persian Mithraic religion, like people with nimbuses, like saints, that's from the auras of the Sol Invictus religion that Constantine worshipped. It was a monotheistic pagan religion. Celibate priests, that's pagan. Nuns, celibate, pagan. The Yuletide log, a pagan celebration, suddenly becomes the birthday of Christ. There are so many things, including the Holy Eucharist, which if you look at the Mithraic Eucharist compared directly with the Holy Eucharist, they're almost verbatim the same. So there are indications that perhaps there's a lot of things we assume are Christian that we should render back to Caesar.
John, we've only got about 50 seconds left. Do tell people where they can get your books.
Well, I want to tell everybody, especially Coast listeners in Alaska, that I'm coming to Alaska in just a couple weeks. I'm going to be at the Crown Plaza doing lectures and then later doing readings at the center.
Oh, great. Is that all on your website?
Yeah, just have everybody come to my website. Go click on the Contact Me menu button, and I'll tell you all about it.
Super. John, thanks. I'll see you in Everett, Washington in a couple months.
Yes, it's coming soon.
Here it is, March 23rd. Now, when I come back, we're going to have a couple things here for you. I'm going to expand tonight. We're going to have predictions. Give me your predictions for 2019, but it's also going to be open lines. So let's talk about other things, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, we'll open up the 2018 vault and see what's in there.